There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But now you guys have the guy who wrote the Doonesbury cartoon as your prime minister, right?
I thought the same thing. I was like, why is everybody talking about Gary Trudeau? So what's going on?
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 62 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Aaron Vey in Whitby, Ontario.
Hi there.
Nothing about the Blue Jays?
Let's go Blue Jays.
Okay. I expected more, you know.
Well, you know, you know, they may not even be in the playoffs by the time this airs, Tim.
Oh, honesty. I'm also joined by my co-host in Seattle, Washington, Jaime Lopez.
How's it going?
And we also have Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Hey, everybody.
I think you're in San Jose.
I am in San Jose.
Well, there you go. Start talking for a few seconds.
Oh, you want us to talk? Okay.
Yeah, say something, Aaron.
Well, I'll talk about how awful these Apple Watch commercials are.
Oh,
don't you just hate them? Don't you hate them?
Can you give me an example of one? I don't know.
Well, some new ones just got announced tonight. Here, let me Skype. This I'll put this here, but this style of ad, like, this is the second set of four that they put out, and they're all the same. Like, they just got people on these like sort of neon horizoned background soundstage things.
Yeah,
they are just, the style of them really makes my teeth ache. I don't know how else to explain it, and they're only like 15 seconds long. They're really super short.
Oh, they're like Gap commercials.
Yeah, I guess. The Gap, the chain?
Yeah.
Yeah,
music's groovy.
Kind of like that. I just don't like them at all.
I don't know if you could hear the groovy music there that was playing, but...
Yeah, I've not seen this new batch yet. I've seen the first batch, which is uneven at best. I think the one that's probably the best one of the first batch was the girl on the Vespa, where she drives up. Needs direction somewhere. Okay, that seemed reasonable. It kind of showed what it could do.
Yeah,
I think probably the cheesiest one I saw was the was it like parents, I guess, and are out on like
date night.
Yeah, that's terrible. Or they're like, I don't even remember. They get some sort of status about their kid and
baby's asleep.
Continue.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Now we can have fun.
And the concept, I'm sure it played better in the storyboards. But then you see them sort of dancing like Elaine Bennis from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was like, oh, yeah, the casting wasn't so good. Uh-huh. The visual design, I think what they were trying to go for was the old iconic iPod view, right? It's got that same vibrant colors and limited background. But
no, these aren't working at all.
Like the two color ones with the black and white sort of.
Yeah, the black silhouettes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the bright monochrome backgrounds. This is not like that at all, and it just falls so flat. I don't like them at all. I don't like them. Apple TV is interesting.
Yeah, that's...
And I can talk about that because I've been doing some ATV development.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and I think that it went Gold Master today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Along with Xcode 7.1, which I cannot get because my App Store app continues to fail. Drive me insane.
Yeah. Somebody else was mentioning that, something similar to that.
I was tweeting about it today.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Oh, there's a 7.1 out today? I don't see that yet.
Yeah, 7.1 came out today.
Oh, bizarre. I was, just as we were talking about that, I was looking at the App Store, and it just appeared.
Ah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's great. It's a great release because it's finally everything that Apple's done is back together under one roof at last, you know?
You mean one shipping version?
One shipping version of Xcode now does Mac, iOS, Watch 2, and Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's... We've been having to use different versions of Xcode to develop all that.
Yeah, I have 4 on my dock right now.
4 Xcodes?
Yeah, I have 6.4, 7.01, the beta, which I guess is 7.1. And
you don't have to use 6.4 anymore, do you?
No, you say that. You say that.
Well, I asked it, actually, to be accurate.
I do have to keep a copy of it around. I have a few client apps that are still back there.
All right.
In that other language that we used to use back in the old days.
You know, you can still write Objective-C in Xcode 7.1.
Yeah, I know. It's not so much that. It's that there's a whole bunch of deprecated methods that I have to go through and clean up, and it's a budget issue. So,
all right. Well, you
and
go,
I don't
girl.
Think you can do builds against the iOS 8 SDK in 7.1, can you?
I don't know. Yeah, I think I had heard that as well. Yeah. I think I'm still building towards 8.4 or something to that effect, right?
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah,
you can't build an app to support iOS 8 in Xcode 7 anymore?
Well, you can set a deployment target to to iOS 7, but you can't build against the old SDK.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
You mean? Right.
Yeah, and that will certainly cause problems for you, like the ATS stuff for sure,
exactly,
and a couple other rules that come into play.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ATS
mm-hmm.
is a major. Once you're past it, you can never go back. Kind of area.
Well,
yeah.
You know, you add a couple of lines to your .info plist, right?
Well, yeah.
I actually did put the AT Apple Transport Security is what we're talking about. I did actually put the Apple Transport Security stuff into one of my builds to test it against iOS 9 to make sure my server connectivity worked, and I found a whole bunch of issues. I had to go back. And, you know, our server guy and I had to go through and update the server and test it and figure out what TLS we were using, all that kind of stuff. But I left it in the code, and then I went back. And the shipping version we have now actually has the comments in the info plist, even though it's still targeting 8-point-something or other, right? So, yeah, so we did test that stuff. And I think Mark and I were talking about that after the show a couple of weeks ago. So it's a challenge.
So you've got to be able to knock out at least one version of Xcode in your doc right now, with 7.1 out now, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the beta one can go away.
Yeah, the beta can go away now.
Yeah, I mean, because I have to be able to write toward, because of my other commitment, I have to write towards WatchKit, and I have to write towards the latest and tvOS as well. But
yeah, yeah. So now you can use just the mainline App Store version of Xcode to do that stuff. And that, I think, is huge.
What's interesting though, is I was hanging on to my main Xcode was 6.4, and so when I did the El Capitan update and all that kind of stuff, I switched over to 7.01, and then somebody told me, oh, you can still download, if you go to Apple's development site, you know, the download page, you can actually go back and get the older version 6.4, which I did. But interestingly enough, I just installed it last night, and I can't. The schemes menu is gone now, so I can't even pick a scheme in 6.4. So fortunately, I do have another machine that's not updated, so if I have to, I can go back and build over there. So,
ay ay ay.
I know it's as bad as you were saying, like as having multiple copies of Xcode betas to play against, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny. I had sort of a similar experience, not quite the same, but you know. Obliquely similar, developing for Apple TV today, or yesterday, actually, and I was, I got the second wave Apple TV units, but they didn't come with the proper cable to connect to the Apple TV.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So apparently the first generation units, can you confirm this, Tim?
Yes, I
got
have
a USB-A to USB-C cable.
Yes, I have it in my hand. I'm looking at it right now.
So nice, because there was no such cable in my box.
Mm-hmm.
So my only option right now, given the lack of such a cable, is I'm taking the power cord from my MacBook.
Yeah. Oh, yes, right.
Which is a USB-C to USB-C. And I can only develop for the Apple TV on my MacBook. So whenever I want to work
because the power cable is a USB to USB-C, like on both ends?
On the MacBook, the only port is a USB-C port.
Yes, of course, yes.
Ditto for the Apple TV. Now, because the Apple or the MacBook comes with a USB-C cable.
On both ends, male
on
both
ends.
Ends,
yeah. That's right.
Okay.
So that's my only option. I was getting all set up to do it from my iMac, because my iMac and my Apple TV and my TV are like within a hand stretch of each other. So I was like going to plug this cable in, and I thought, okay, well, it came with this lightning cable in the box. It must be lightning on the Apple TV side. Nope.
So I just had a thought. Is there an Apple power adapter for your computer? Like, can you buy a spare one? Because it would come with the cable, wouldn't it?
Yes. I did. I have bought one, actually, because I forgot mine at the cottage once and had
Came
home without it. So now I do have two power adapters for the MacBook, which is handy because I keep one at my desk and then I carry one in my bag. But
sure, yeah, of course.
But that's not the point. I mean, like, I'm fortunate that I had a MacBook.
Is that the only way currently to get a USB-C to USB-C cable, is what I'm saying?
In the U.S. we have stores you can go to and buy those things.
Yeah, okay, yes.
No,
No, hang on, guys. Stop for a second. You're not getting it.
you can
buy those cables. Of course you can. But what you cannot buy that I haven't been able to find...
Yes, I know where you're going with this.
...is a USB-A to a USB-C cable.
Right, right.
Apple doesn't sell you one.
No. Well, as a matter of fact, Greg and I were just over at Best Buy like an hour ago, and he's in the same boat as you. He's got the Apple TV second generation developer.
Second wave, yeah. Same thing.
Same boat.
And he can't plug the goddamn thing in, can he?
No, and he was telling me of a company that does have them, Mobile something or other, or Monoprice, I think it is.
Of course.
They have them, and yeah, because we were just at the Best Buy asking the guy, you know, because we had to buy a camera, and asking the guy, do you have such a thing? And he said he, in fact, had just ordered in two, and they're really scarce, and blah blah blah. So even Best Buy doesn't have them.
So I guess the only way to do it, if you're going to do this the Apple way, is that you have to buy like a plain USB cable, male on both sides, and the USB-C to USB adapter.
Right, right.
And that's kind of crazy. So I don't know why Apple did that. But they did it, and sucks to be you.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's that.
Cable wars.
That's how they get you, Aaron.
That is how they get you.
They sucker you in.
My $1 Apple TV.
They make you buy the 5K iMac and the...
Yeah, that went fine. But
Monoprice, yeah, here it is right here.
Not a fan.
I'll put the link in the show notes for the people who are looking for the Monoprice cable. I just found it on Google. On the Google, Mr. Google.
And it kind of makes sense with the conspiracy theory out there that says that these Apple TVs were actually supposed to be given out at WWDC.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it actually makes a ton of sense with, like, you know, as a conspiracy theory when you add all these things together, especially the cheaping out on the cable in this last wave.
Yeah.
So if you remember the WWDC teaser, or even the main poster, right? Like, they have like a poster that signifies the theme for that year, and it was the center of everything, or center of the universe, whatever it was. They announced nothing, not a single thing that could possibly make sense with that.
Exactly. Well, there was sort of now that you mentioned that, there was sort of speculation that it was Apple TV related because it had that sort of shape in the design, right?
Well, I mean, it certainly was Apple TV related. I mean, it's as certain as you can get without having Tim Cook himself actually say, yes, this was Apple TV related, right?
Yeah.
So it's still speculation, but it makes sense with the design, with the statement. If you're thinking of the TV being the center of your living room, which is part of your house and HomeKit, and also the fact that, you know, if you say, okay, well, if Apple had to pull Apple TV stuff out for reasons... And later on comes out and say, hey, by the way, here's this program. And, oh, look, you don't have to actually pay for these devices. It's like, well, we weren't planning to make money for them anyways. So we're just going to give them out. Right? You're just going to give one, you know, like Oprah style. It's like, you get one and you get one and you get one.
So do you suppose that there were 5,000 of them in hand sort of thing? Is that the idea?
I would not be surprised if it was close to 5,000.
Maybe that's what the first wave was, 5,000 developers got, roughly. I mean, we're speculating here, of course.
Yeah, and then they scrounged up whatever parts they could find. It's like, oh, look, we found one that fell behind the bins. Oh, here he goes.
Yeah.
This one's going to Aaron and Vay and Whitby.
Wait, these ones don't have any cables. I send them to Aaron and Greg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it. That's exactly what happened, right? Like, they like, oh, these boxes don't have the cables. Oh, well.
Yeah, apparently, what's our friend, WatchKiss Resources?
Brian
Gillum. Brian Gillum posted a link on, I think, on Twitter. He basically made his own cable. By soldering bits together.
Oh, that's what he was going on about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is what I get for not paying all attention. Yep, you're right. That's right. He soldered his own cable.
Yep. Maker extraordinaire.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a little over my pay grade, but super cool.
Okay, so for those of you who haven't figured out what we're talking about my posts originally I put up on the other day that somebody had sort of figured out that Tim Cook was going to announce that Apple TV will ship on Monday coming, and that was on the Mac Rumors site, and as well the Xcode went Gold Master today with Apple TV OS in it, right?
Yeah, the GM of Apple TV OS came out today, so we were able to install it. Those are the developer units can install the GM on that device.
Now, question though, do you not have to have the USB cable to install the update?
Yes, of course. You need to plug it into your Mac.
I was talking to Greg about this afternoon, was when I got my Apple TV, it didn't have an OS. I had to actually plug it in and download the, and do a restore with iTunes to get the OS onto my Apple TV.
Interesting.
Now, you got the OS on your TV when it arrived?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the one extra step you didn't have to go through. And that may be why Apple felt they had to give us the cables. Although I would think they would feel they have to give us the cables so that we can actually build frickin' apps.
That's kind of the point.
And test them out on the frickin' device.
It's asking an awful lot to not only not include the cable, but make no mention of it anywhere. Literally, no mention. I looked around. And I could find no documentation. There's nothing
Did you look in the box?
I looked in the box. And there's nothing in the box that says you should get yourself one of these cables.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just, you know, blind luck that I happened to own a MacBook, so I had a suitable cable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like Greg, he's screwed, right? Like, he doesn't have a cable.
Well, Greg has... No, he doesn't have the new Air.
So, that's sad. I'm surprised that we haven't heard more about this.
The cable gate?
Sure, call it cable gate. Why not? Okay, so...
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I have to say this. I didn't realize this at the time because I was too young to realize it, but my sister told me that we were actually in Washington the weekend that Watergate broke.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I didn't think that you'd ever been young.
Sad but true. Sad but true.
Okay.
Wow. So Apple TV, Apple orders TV beginning Monday, right? And then shipping the following week.
That's the plan.
Is that a prediction, Jaime?
No.
I'm reading this article, which they say that at the Wall Street Journal, Digital? I'm not sure what the D is for WSJD Live.
WSDJ Live.
Yeah, I don't know what that stands for.
Digital Live.
Digital Live. Yeah, there we go.
Gotta be.
That was actually an announcement for Tim Cook.
He said it himself with his own face.
About as subtle as it gets, so that's cool.
Oh, he already announced it. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was rumored a day or two prior because they knew that he was coming out on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so that's very exciting stuff.
Okay, question about the developer kit. So I remember, Tim, a few weeks ago you said that the first wave one that you got was pretty primitive and basic and clearly not a shipping product.
The actual OS experience itself, yeah. I didn't quite say that out loud because I don't think I can. But I did. I think Aaron's question to me was if I was given the choice compared to what I got, would I buy a retail version? And my answer was yes. I think I would need to.
So what about this next wave? Was that more advanced or?
So Mark, I think it appears that the conversation about whether this is suitable or is the real thing is hinging on a software only. The hardware appears to be the shipping hardware. Yeah. And I would speculate, I updated my Apple TV today, but I actually didn't use it because I had to use my existing Apple TV to watch the Blue Jays kick the Royals' butts today, which was awesome, but... I didn't get a chance to look at it, but we got the GM of the Apple TV OS today. Therefore, I think it will be the same as what anybody would be buying next week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you think if we download the GM, we'll get to watch the Blue Jays kick the Royals' butts on
assuming that MLB Thursday? Ships their app. Yeah, totally.
Oh.
But I suspect that
how are you watching it then on your old Apple TV?
TV. Yeah, I've got the MLB app there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, basically, the third-party software doesn't seem to be on my Apple TV.
No, of course not, because there's no App Store yet. So, you know,
But even the stuff that comes with the current Apple TV, like the YouTube and...
Doesn't matter anymore. It's a totally different operating system and a totally different platform, and so those apps have to be shipped by those companies. Is Google even going to ship a YouTube app for the Apple TV? Yeah, that's what I thought too.
The only reason I use my Apple TV is for Netflix, to be honest with you. So,
Yeah. Well, we haven't heard about a Netflix app for the Apple TV. We haven't heard about a YouTube app.
Mm-hmm.
BBC, for example, said no. We've got no immediate plans to ship an Apple TV app for the iPlayer. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And then some nerds, hacked their API and created their own iPlayer app and put it on GitHub.
Oh, cool.
It's glorious.
Yeah.
Wait, so taking a step back, so isn't Netflix one of the earliest ones? I thought they were shown as well, the handful of folks who had access to the unified search from the get-go.
I would think so.
I would hope so. Right, I don't remember that.
He's right. At the keynote, they were there. What do you mean?
Netflix and Hulu stand out in my mind. And MLB, of course. The others, I really don't remember who the other major players were.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but I will be happy to take your word for it.
No. That was in the demo where they said, show me movies with, Michael Fassbender.
Yeah. The question is, when will they be available? And I think that won't happen until the public starts getting these things,
mm-hmm.
right? There's going to be an app store for the Apple TV. Is it the iOS app store? And the Apple TV is just another thing that comes along with it, like your watch apps do?
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking. I don't know. This is coming from a guy who's actually actively building an Apple TV app.
Right.
So, it is a target in Xcode in your project, but I don't actually know how the mechanism for how it is sold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Apple said at the introduction, they said, we're going to encourage you to make your Apple TV apps free.
Right.
But they didn't say your apps are going to be free. Am I right? The silence from the other guys suggests that nobody knows the answer to this question at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm racking my brain here thinking, I don't remember them actually showing what the purchasing mechanism looked like for apps, or even what the, how you would add new apps, new channels to the device.
Well, a friend of the show, Mike Berg, We Heart Games, was speculating. He was asking in a chat about whether, he just found that his experience working with this new device was that entering, your payment information is going to be awfully painful. Based on the current, interface, which is this little fancy, remote. I can't remember if there's no, because there is the Bluetooth app on the phone that you can use. And actually, now that I think about it, I have actually used my existing remote, and I think I used my my Bluetooth app on my phone to use the keyboard on the, when I was entering information in, because when I first got my Apple TV, I was challenged with how to use the remote. So my VCR still flashes 12, by the way, just in case you're wondering.
I mean, there are a couple of ways that they could have implemented this, and I actually don't remember them actually showing this, but it would be nice if you had something requires purchase. Great. Well, one of your devices with Touch ID is probably nearby, like your iPad or your iPhone. Is like,
hold the phone.
You had a little prompt there, and like, okay, great, just do that.
So I have a thought. One of the parts that didn't make it into our show last week, of course, was Aaron's talk about the new devices. And I bought, since we had the show, I bought the Magic Trackpad 2. But there's now this Bluetooth keyboard, which is like almost like a zero configuration device. Like when I got my Apple my trackpad, I literally plugged in the lightning cable, and I had no idea about this, but it just sort of said, okay, your trackpad's ready for use. I didn't have to do any configuration, no Bluetooth mumbo jumbo like you have to do with current trackpads, right? So I'm kind of wondering now, if you plug your trackpad into your Apple TV or your keyboard, let's say, could you not then use the new Bluetooth, shiny new Bluetooth keyboard with the Apple TV?
No, you have to pair it using the standard Bluetooth process.
But it is possible.
Recall that your Apple TV only has a USB-C port on it.
Yeah.
So
I think we talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. No standard USB, right?
But my point, I guess the point is, though, they've just come out with this fancy new battery-operated keyboard. Could they not? Well, not that they didn't have one before, but could they? Or did they? No, not rechargeable. Anyway, is it not possible to configure your devices to work with the Apple TV? Isn't that part of the whole process, the fact that you can have other controllers on it?
Yes, it is, but only via the generic standard Bluetooth pairing process.
Okay, so
this is true for iOS as well. So that pairing with the cable only works with a Mac.
Okay, but okay, the zero configuration stuff, but it is theoretically possible to take the brand new keyboard or any of the wireless keyboards and use it with your Apple TV. Is that possible?
That is
today?
Not only theoretically possible, but it's been true for some time now.
Okay, having only ever used my Apple TV for Netflix, as I think I mentioned like 5 minutes ago, not been down that road.
It works.
Curious.
It works.
Good to know.
I don't know what the point is, to be honest. You know,
of my query.
No, of connecting a Bluetooth keyboard. You know, for those rare times where you have to enter text, it's very rare, right?
Oh, I do have a question, follow-up question.
Go for it.
Have you tried Siri on your remote?
In the developer version, it doesn't work.
Are you sure? Because somebody mentioned that if you set your region to US, USA, USA, USA.
In America, you can.
Yeah, then apparently
in
it
that
works.
Case, I'm not sure. But for me, it did not work.
Mm.
And the option in the settings was turned off. That's one of the things I was going to try with the GM.
Okay,
now I've got some real-time follow-up. I'm looking now on iTunes Connect, and in my iOS app listing for Magpie, I can see that I can add a tvOS app alongside my iOS app.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer my question earlier, it's attached to your iOS app, your tvOS app. You hip to my jive talking?
Oh, really? So they're like watch targets and
app
extensions.
I guess so. Well, it's not an app extension. It's definitely a separate app target. So it's not the same as a watch app.
App extensions are built by targets as well. So
Yes, they are, but they're an extension. They're not an app in and of itself.
Yeah, I follow you. Right?
So a tvOS app is a standalone app.
Mm-hmm.
And so in iTunes Connect anyway, you can add a tvOS app alongside of it. It's a little weird, but there it is. And to answer the question about charging money for it,
mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at the app info. And as usual, they've changed everything, right? So it's really hard to parse. I don't see anywhere where you set a price. So it just might be like included right alongside your iOS version. But, you know, I'm just saying this on the fly right now. I honestly don't know.
Hmm.
Which, you know, typical Apple. Why would they want anyone making money? Yeah, it definitely. I don't see anything here about your pricing. There's pricing is a separate thing altogether. Yep. I'm sure it goes right alongside your iOS app. You pay for the iOS app and you get the TV app for free or within it. So You might, you know, a developer could say, you know, increase their iOS app's price because it comes with the tvOS app.
Right.
Which is crazy. Who would do that? But that seems to be what's going on here. Yeah, I'm willing to say at this point that pricing is something totally separate from your tvOS or iOS app. It's one price for both.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's that. And that'll come out next week. And developers are frantically coding right now because we're only getting like less than a week or just about a week's notice, I guess, on the GM of Xcode 7.1 and tvOS.
Right.
We're getting all that a week before the platform actually launches. And so, scramble, baby. I will not scramble. I will just do it when I can. But I can say now that a Magpie version is coming.
Well, good to know.
Good to know. Not that anyone cares.
Well, yeah. For the five of us who have your app.
For the five of us that do, then yes, it's going to be awesome. it's pretty nice. You know, one thing that's weird. Can I talk about this? Can I talk about the OS? Like the SDK?
TVOS?
The TVOS SDK.
Is that a question like, are you asking me I'm not a lawyer, but you're asking me anywhere?
That's right. That's what I'm doing. Yes.
I'm not sure that you can.
Okay. Maybe next week then. Remind me. And I got some thoughts about the SDK.
Okay.
All right. Because after next week, we'll be able to talk about it because it'll be public then.
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
Great. I will say the one confusing thing is I was... with a friend and we were researching something and the, you know, just using Google, it's like, oh, it's like, I can't remember this parameter for like UI image picker controller. And what came up just didn't make sense to me. I was looking and I was like, where's all the options? What's going on here? It's like, oh, wait a minute. This is the tvOS documentation. Why did that come up as the number one result? I guess like, oh, it's probably very popular right now. So that kind of makes sense, right? A lot of people searching for the docs.
That was on Google or in Xcode docs?
On Google. And then I said, wait a minute, okay, let's just go to Xcode and look at the docs there, just to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or get Dash. What a great app. Do you have that on the Mac?
I do, but I haven't really dug into it too much.
Oh, that was me specifically? No, I don't.
I was asking you, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, both of you, because, you know, Tim, you haven't really dived into it, as you say. Mark, you have Dash?
I don't have it, no.
You guys really need to check this out. And we've talked about it on past shows, because I was actually thinking about making a pick of it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we did have
it as a pick.
We did, yeah. That's what I was going to finish saying, is that yeah. I went back and looked at our previous picks, and back in episode 22, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Capelli, I think it's Capelli Software. Yeah, capelli.com/dash. And I'll put that link in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just us discussing it. It's not my pick. I've got another pick. And anyway, this app is a documentation browser for all the software. And so, you know, if you're a developer of any stripe, it supports documentation sets for anything that you can name, basically, any language, any framework. And in my case, of course, it works with Apple's documentation for all of its SDKs. Mm-hmm. So you download this the SDKs in Xcode, and then Dash finds them and gives you, like, super fast access to them. Remember when Xcode 6 came out and it had a new documentation viewer that was total garbage?
Mm-hmm.
That's when Dash became a must-have in my toolbox, because instead of, like, going to this other window inside of Xcode, which gave you sometimes – it was very slow. That was the first thing. And gave you kind of comical results when you did a search. Dash is instant, and it works very, very well. It's mm-hmm. Apple's documentation, but it's just parsed much more efficiently and is much easier to use. So highly recommend it. If you're doing iOS development, you just select the iOS documentation set, and everything you type in is an iOS result, et cetera, et cetera. Great piece of software. And 2.0 just came out fairly recently, I guess, not just came out, but mm-hmm. a few months ago. It's a $20 purchase. It's free to try from the App Store, so it has a limited functionality mode from the App Store, and then a $20 purchase unlocks the whole thing. But that's not my pick, just for the record. Anyway, Jaime, use that, or at least check it out.
Will do.
I know. Well, I was going to ask Jaime, you posted this thing about NetNewsWire crash. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but can you fill us in what's going on with that?
Yes, so this is a post on Medium by Daniel Pascoe, the CEO of BlackPixel,
mm-hmm.
and their product NetNewsWire, the RSS reader app for iOS and Mac.
Hey, Mac. Speaking of Mac.
Oh, that wasn't my Mac.
That was actually my dog.
Oh, really? Oh, sorry. Sorry, Mac.
But yeah, so they ended up with a little bit of drama over, this past week, I guess, related to the app just sort of like mysteriously crashing, and they have a nice little post-mortem about what they found and what the investigation was.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the TLDR line is great on the sub-post, where it's like an unneeded check plus a harmlessly expired cert plus live assertions equals the explosion there, the wonderful graphic they have there. So the quickie on the root cause analysis, right? So NetNewsWire uses, they're saying here, certificate pinning. So SSL certificate pinning and public key pinning are a couple of techniques that folks use to make sure that you have a little bit more of a protection against man-in-the-middle attacks in an app, right? So if you were, you know, a devious person, or maybe just an interested person, to be fair, you could attach an app to something like Charles Proxy and start mm-hmm. sniffing all the traffic and seeing how an app works and reverse engineering things. For folks who have, you know, APIs that they own, particularly web service APIs, this can be a little problematic, because if you don't have the right security set up, folks can just run your app, see what kinds of requests are being made, and then fool your service into believing that it's communicating with an app when it's actually communicating with some sort of script or crawler.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's kind of the basis here. So trying to protect against that thing. In this case, right, the client code in the app trying to figure out, like, am I talking to a legit service or is somebody trying to do a man in the middle attack? it says here, right, that the client-side code used an assertion to validate the bundled cert, so the SSL cert, on the app side using the public key. In bold here, it says, you know, this check was unnecessary as the public key would still be usable even if the local cert itself had expired, right? Because there's an expiry date for every cert that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I would quibble a little bit, that I think what's being talked about is actually public key pinning and not cert pinning, because if it was cert pinning, it would be proper and valid to say, look, this cert is not the same. I need a fresh validated cert.
Right, right.
But even moving beyond that, right, it was like, okay, well, the check said, oh, well, I need to look at this envelope. Oh, the envelope's out of date. I'm going to take a look at the public key. It's like, oh, wait, no, I'm not even going to get to that point of checking to see, is this public key correct? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, oh, this cert is garbage, right? Even though it's perfectly valid information. To make things worse, somehow the assertions that they have in their code base for that were turned on live, and not just for debug mode, as you would normally expect to have. So to make things extra worse is that this didn't just result in, you know, hey, like, you know, my app is refusing to do any network calls. That would be rather inconvenient. You wouldn't be able to see anything new, but you presumably would have cached local copies. Instead, the assertion says, hey, great, everything explode. Just keep crashing the app.
Wow. Smooth.
Yeah, I mean, that's a super bummer situation. And kudos to these guys to come out and sort of explain what happened there. I mean, they certainly didn't owe this level of detail, where they could just say, hey, we're working on something, we'll fix it. And they had updates out. Certainly something to keep in mind if you're looking to add cert pinning or public key pinning for your app. Like, it's extra security, but it's like another thing that you can get wrong too. So be careful.
Oh, you can get it wrong. Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah. It's super easy to get wrong. Like, it'd be nice if it was a whole lot easier to get right.
Hmm. Yeah. It obviously is something that I, you know, of concern, because I know that I talked to Graham Lee about that a year and a half ago, about, you know, he suggested we use cert pinning in our apps so to keep them secure, right? But the issue was, I guess, every time you update the certificate, which may be annually, you have to sort of make sure you have a coinciding update in the app as well. So
that's why, that's a good statement there. So that's why people will choose one of two different methodologies. They will either choose the, okay, we're willing to have the once a year update where a new cert is live, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is relatively simple, and it's nice because if you have that kind of environment, because you can know, hey, as soon as this cert expires, nothing can communicate using that cert. So even if, you know, some bad hacker out there decompiled your app and was like, oh, look, I found this cert, I'm going to use it in my implementation, it won't work anymore as soon as that new cert goes live. The problem is that it may not be feasible to just cut off a huge swath of your customer base or user base in that way, right? Like, you'd have to understand what level of control do you have over their updating, or you would have to understand how likely is it that they will update, and are you willing to accept that? That's where some other folks, like Google, I think, is well known for doing this. They will have multiple certs live at any one given time. They'll have overlapping between them,
right,
but they
right.
do the pinning against the public key. And I think that's what was attempted here. They're trying to pin against the public key, but there was an unnecessary check that, with the addition of the assertions stumble, just caused this unfortunate situation.
I thought that when you ran NS assertions, they didn't run in production code. Oh, no, it's NS block assertion.
Well, that's what you're saying here, too. It's like, look, we're checking all the configurations, and as far as we can tell, our assertions are set up correctly, and so who knows?
I think it's just an Xcode bug or something? I wonder.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way to me. Like, this is the sort of thing that would be pretty easy to get wrong in a MITRE update of Xcode, right? Yeah. Like, maybe 7.0 had it and 7.1 doesn't.
Yeah, scary.
You mean Apple makes mistakes?
Oh,
no, never.
It happened once, I think.
Yeah, when they fired Steve Jobs.
This is a cool column because you understand the position that Black Pixel is in, right? NetNewsWire is not their business. It's not their where they make their bread and butter. They are a contract development firm. So they have a lot of big companies they build software for that you are never going to know about, right? Like, their customers are big companies that you have heard of, and you will never know that it was Black Pixel that made their apps. So, but their reputation, nonetheless, is hugely important, right? So when they do have their name attached to a product like NetNewsWire, it behooves them to not have situations like this where something that they have their name on does what just happened here. Like, I'm a NetNewsWire customer myself, and for the past few days, it has just imploded on startup, which is, the problem that they were fixing here. So they have to come out with a detailed explanation, not for their NetNewsWire customers per se, but for their actual paying customers that they make their living from, for whom this is like, wow, I thought you guys knew what you were doing.
Yeah, this is a reputation issue for sure. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So can you just really...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to really quickly ask, what is NetNewsWire? What does it do?
It's an RSS client. It's one of the oldest ones
we have. Mac-based?
It started on the Mac. Brent Simmons was the developer of NetNewsWire back in the, I'm going to say, 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody objected, so I'm going to stick with that. And he maintained it for many years and then sold it to NewsGator, which was a large enterprise-style aggregator of news readers, which also had a Windows version. I think it was called FeedDemon. And then eventually they ended up selling it to Black Pixel a few years ago. They had an iOS version, and it didn't do too great. Around the time that Google Reader became popular... Black Pixel, or no, it wasn't Black Pixel, it was FeedDemon. I'm getting all these names mixed up. NewsGator, thank you. Made the decision to remove their custom syncing engine and use Google Reader's syncing engine.
Oh, okay.
Which sort of damaged them, in my mind anyway, because it allowed any NetNewsWire user to immediately switch to any other RSS client without cost, basically.
Mm.
If you were using NetNewsWire and their syncing service, then you relied on that client, and that was part of what locked you in, if you will, to using it on iOS and on Mac.
Mm.
But when they switched to Google Reader as their syncing service, then you could use any client, right?
Right,
and so
right.
I switched to Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, and it was, at the time, the new hotness, still a very good client, by the way. But now, I think Black Pixel learned that lesson because they developed their own syncing service. And of course, Google Reader's gone. So so now they have their own syncing service, and it works amongst all the Mac and the iOS versions of NetNewsWire.
Hmm.
Hmm. So this, what their problem was here was the Mac version of it, not the iOS version. It's been working fine the whole way through.
It says here they had an iOS update approved. And on the App Store as of the writing of this article. But they were still waiting for the Mac App Store version, which must be what you have, because you already have the direct download version available on their website.
Yeah, and since this thing was published, the Mac App Store version was approved. So that happened today, as we record on the 21st of October. Yeah, kind of a really bad, actually, for Black Pixel. Like, this does not look good. I don't care who you are. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about it is I follow Daniel Pascoe on Twitter, and he's been, to his credit, I mean, he has stood up and he's taken charge of this thing. He's very public about it. He's very honest about it. And always, nothing but praise for his team, of whom probably at least one, maybe two developers really kind of screwed up here, but saying that, he's gotten several emails from people on the team, falling on their own swords to take the blame for this. And he's like, no, the blame is with me. I'm the guy in charge. So blah, 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 blah. Dan Pascoe often is vociferous and full-throated in his praise of his own people, which has to make them feel pretty good. It seems like a little much sometimes, but, to each their own. This was no exception. Screw ups happen. It's inevitable, but, you can't hate how he handled it. He handled it with the utmost aplomb.
I have sort of an update, I guess you could call it.
Sure.
Even though it's not something we've talked about, it's just something that came up over the past week or two that might be of interest to people. So I use the PayPal SDK in a couple of my apps.
Oh, really? Okay.
And so it's a real easy solution for just doing some simple e-commerce stuff. Mm-hmm. And they use, as part of their distribution, the Card.io SDK, which, if you're not familiar with it, it's a really nice tool that lets you scan credit cards, within your app, so that you don't have to actually type in a number, and it's the app never sees the credit card information. It's just all handled internally. So it's a kind of a nice thing. It's built into the PayPal app. Mm-hmm. So recently, last couple of weeks, they actually were pretty proactive and updated the SDK for iOS 9 and Xcode 7, including bitcode support. Now, unfortunately, because they included bitcode, the size of the .a file, the shared library, became enormous for Card.io. Right. It was 250 megabytes. And if you've ever used GitHub, and I know everyone has, you know that there is a hard limit of what you can upload to GitHub of 100 megabytes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so for people who like to put their third-party libraries into GitHub and we're using Card.io or PayPal, you are just stuck. I mean, you could not check in your, well, you could not push your repo up to GitHub. So this was kind of an issue for a couple of weeks there. But the good news is that they pretty quickly acted and came up with a new version that splits up that .a file into multiple .a files. So problem is solved as of yesterday, which is great. So the reason I bring it up is, well, one, just to let anyone know who's, has facing this problem, that there's a solution out there. But also, I kind of think this might happen a lot going forward with bitcode as people update their libraries. Anyone else run into issues with bitcode or anything like that?
Not me.
I've only run into it in a few cases, but I had to sort of, I think I had to remove it from one of my apps. But other than that, no.
Yeah.
I've not tried it myself, but I've been wondering if, and so stepping back a little bit into iOS 9 history as it went public, from the day one of iOS 9's availability, everything seemed to work just fine in terms of downloading and installing apps on iOS. Of course, the bitcode stuff was turned off, I think, for a week or two, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But over the last couple of weeks, I've been having weird random issues with apps just not installing properly or refusing to install. They'll get to what appears to be 100% and get stuck, or it'll sort of decide that now it's an iCloud download and give you the little arrow with a down facing icon. And in one case, it sort of removed an app, or at least removed it from Springboard. And then I went back into the App Store, tried to download it again, and it just sort of instantaneously appeared on Springboard. So I don't know if that's, it could be App Store specific problems, but it just seems weird that since bitcode went back online that they've been seeing these weird, random, hard to reproduce issues.
I've actually seen the same issue, and I did see somewhere someone saying, and how's that for good credentials, someone somewhere said that this was a 9.01 issue, or 9.02, whatever one we're on.
Really?
And that's supposed to be fixed in 9.1.
Yeah, I saw that in the release notes today when 9.1 came out today, and Apple mentioned that very issue in their release notes. I was trying to find them just now while you were talking, Jaime, but I haven't been able to. I got the SDK release notes.
Did you Google someone said something?
No. Some guy in a trench coat in a parking garage.
That's right.
No, I read it in goddamn release notes.
Come here.
It's funny, you can't get back the release notes from or the version that you got installed.
Well, it's good if they actually had it identified as an error and
they did.
Fixed. I've not yet updated, so I am on 9.02. I'm going to update to 9.1 sometime tonight, probably. As usual, I always advise people if you don't have to get errors and grace. Let Aaron go first, brick his phone, or not brick his phone, hopefully.
Yep. Way is clear, my friends. Proceed, go forward with my love.
Yeah, I get the opportunity to do the same thing with El Capitan, too, I think.
It only burned us a little bit, last week.
It's interesting that they did a 9.1 release and an El Capitan release all in the same day.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
Huh.
And Xcode 7.1, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of downloading for me to do tonight.
Yeah.
But I will say, Mark, so I have used Card.io just independently as a project before, and it's actually pretty nifty, so I definitely agree. And it was nifty like a year and a half ago. I can imagine what it's like now.
Pretty nice.
I am curious on the PayPal API. Is that, so they have like this, like V0 or something, I forget what they call it, but it's related to their Braintree and Venmo acquisition, right? It's like a one SDK to rule them all something?
Yeah, that's the one that they're recommending using now. I haven't used it yet simply because I have some legacy stuff that are still on the previous one. But I do expect I will upgrade at some point. What's nice about it, from what I've been reading, is that, as you said, it does combine everything, including Apple Pay, into just one drop-in SDK for making purchases, which is pretty nice. So you can do credit cards, you can do PayPal, you can do Apple Pay, probably anything else that PayPal has access to as well, if, you know, corporate PayPal. So
interesting. Yeah. With the one SDK, huh? That's
So the one I'm using is still the PayPal mobile SDK, which was, up until the Braintree purchase, was the kind of the main one for iOS. Braintree has been around for, I don't know, maybe a year or so as part of PayPal.
Yep. Right, so that would be pretty powerful just as an aside here, because it, of course, PayPal is a well-known entity, and a lot of folks have PayPal accounts.
Yep.
Certainly a lot of folks are using Venmo for person-to-person transfers, so that kind of gives you a little bit more of the slice of the pie of, so how close are you to 100% coverage? And folks with Apple Pay, and then a fair number of things are using Braintree, although I don't think a lot of folks have individual Braintree accounts. It's probably more, you know, seller marketplace type things. But
right,
still, that's pretty neat for one SDK to do all of that stuff.
It is, yeah. And PayPal's a trusted name, so you stick that in your app, you know, no one's going to really have qualms about using it.
Right.
Whereas they might if you just use some, you know, homebrew or no-name payment service.
I don't know. There is a fair amount of dislike of PayPal out there, particularly by vendors on PayPal, right? You know, you've heard stories about people having their accounts put on hold, you know, like conference organizers, for example, who see a lot of funds go into their accounts very quickly. Or when PayPal decides to put a freeze on your account because they detect suspicious activity, but it's perfectly legitimate. And they're very bureaucratic, right? So, like, you have to try to get your money out, and you've got to go through a big process and fax in forms and proof of identity and stuff like that. You ever heard any of these stories?
Well, I haven't had those issues myself. But
it happens.
I wonder, it may very well be true. I just haven't really heard about it. But I wonder, now that PayPal is an independent entity, no longer part of eBay.
Oh, it really got spun out today?
It got spun out, yeah.
Ah.
Things may improve as they find themselves being a startup who has to perform quickly and generate more revenue. So maybe they'll get better.
I know one friend who was an early adopter to PayPal when it sort of became a way to collect funds from people, who managed to get his account locked a few times. And I just remember the yelling and screaming that went along with that, right? But I've been using PayPal for, you know, 10 years or so or more, because we were using it for payments early in the day, right, on some of our WordPress sites and stuff like that, but never within an iOS app, though. So,
yeah, it's actually quite convenient.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, and Aaron, I think certainly I'd heard a lot of those stories. They came out a lot in the tech press, and I think this is prior to the separation from eBay, but I think after they acquired Braintree and therefore also Venmo, I think they tried really hard to turn that around. Like, I don't think I've been seeing those stories quite as often anymore.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I haven't heard anything lately.
Yeah, so some culture change, some bit of needing to compete with Stripe, of course, and almost certainly going to be a bit of a change as they're independent, I would guess. So hopefully things are turning around.
So let's go around the table like we usually do and see if anybody has any picks, and we'll stop again at Aaron and see if you have a pick.
This week, my pick is Microsoft Outlook for iOS. Was it last week that we talked about the Surface, or was it the week before?
Talked about the sale of the Surface, and we that part, I don't know how much of that got into the show, but yeah, we did talk about the sale of it, but we talked about the Surface Book
But we talked about we talked about the state of Microsoft software, about Windows, right? And the third-party ecosystem.
Yes.
And that was 2 weeks ago. So that didn't get lost.
No.
Okay. So this is a good counterpoint, because Microsoft has, you know, for some time now, has shipped Outlook for iOS.
Right.
They have it for the iPhone, Watch, and iPad. Mm-hmm. And do you guys use the Apple Mail client on LCAP in iOS 9?
Yes.
And it's a steaming pile, right? Mm. Okay, let me amend my issue. Do you guys use Gmail?
Yes.
I do.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so I'm all Gmail. I've got two accounts that I use for my email, and they're both Google Apps accounts. Okay, I'm
sure.
Custom domains.
Yep.
So ever since I upgraded to LCAP and iOS 9, mail on both platforms has had this enormous and consistent problem moving messages to my archive. Mm-hmm. So every time I would swipe to archive a message, I would get a pop-up message saying, cannot move this message to archives. And that would be it. And, you know, I'd say, okay, the message would appear to be gone from my inbox, but the next time it loaded, it would be back.
No, like, message about permissions or whatever?
No, just can't do it.
Okay.
And it's happening on the Mac and on iOS.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that occasionally. I can't say I've seen it a lot, but I have seen it.
I've been seeing it a lot. It's been nuts. Not 100% of the time, but say 50% of the time. Hmm. And so I'd see it on the iPad, and then I'd go on my Mac and I'd archive it there, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's been a huge problem. And I finally snapped and I said, listen, I've got to switch to something else. And on the Mac, I switched to an app that I've been using for some time called AirMail. AirMail 2 is the current version on the App Store. And it's an excellent mail app that was built from the ground up to support Google Apps. So there are no such problems using that, and it works great. And so I'm sticking with that one. But on the iOS, I needed an app, and AirMail is only available on the Mac. So I got Outlook. And why? Because I happen to have some experience with it already, because I'm working for a client, I mentioned this before, who is a Microsoft shop. And so they had me download Outlook and actually use it to communicate with them. Using actual, you know, Exchange server.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Outlook also supports Gmail and any IMAP server for that matter. So, and it's also free. So you can download it and use it for free on your iPhone and iPad. Like I said, also comes with a Watch app. And this thing is golden, okay? I can't believe I'm saying this. It's really, really nice, guys. Like, it works so well. You just set up your accounts in Gmail. It has this. It comes by default with this sort of focus view, it calls it, where it sort of tries to filter out.
Yeah.
You know, like newsletters and, you know, transactional email and things like that.
Yeah.
You can switch that off, and that's the first thing I did.
Oh, good to know. I
go in the settings, and you can find the thing there, and it's like, don't manage my mail for me.
Thank you very much.
I'm extremely aggressive against my email, so it's no problem. I can handle it. So you can turn that off, and it just – but here's the thing, you know, and this is what it comes down to. It just works, okay? It just works. And the beauty is that it works. The Watch app is fantastic. Like, it's so good. As soon as a mail lands in your inbox, it's on your watch, and it's letting you know.
Yeah, in my case, it's there before my Apple Mail tells me it's there.
Oh, yeah. Like, for a time there, I had both notifications set up, and I got it on my watch for Outlook, and then 5 minutes later, mail's letting me know. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah, I know about that message. I actually archived it from my watch, like, 5 minutes ago. It's crazy. And that's the other great thing with the Watch app, is that you can, like, do these actions from it. You can reply, you can delete, you can archive, which is what I typically do. Mm-hmm. And game over. You are managing your inbox from your wrist, and it's fantastic. If you are like I used to be, and just, you know, Microsoft, no, not even looking at it. Mm-hmm. Give Outlook a look, because it's free, and it works really, really well. So that's my pick for the week.
Can I ask you a dumb user question?
Well, of course. That's what we're here for.
Okay, so while you were talking there, I went into my Apple Mail and I went into my Gmail account, and I selected a couple of messages and I swiped to the left, and they disappeared, and I saw that there's like a little archive thing come up. So my question is, where do they go when you archive them?
Well, in the case of Gmail, they go into your all mail sort of folder, directory, tag, whatever, you know, the paradigm that Google uses.
Yeah.
The point being that it's not trashed, but that it's still okay. Findable.
Yeah.
If you do a search, which is the key, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I've always found to be the power of Gmail, is that you can quite readily do a search and get back anything from as long as you've been using the damn thing.
Right, right.
Even with hundreds of thousands of messages.
Does anyone actually use a Gmail app?
No.
I have it installed, but that was only because at some point I had some crazy thing going on with the default mail app on iOS that just refused to connect to Google servers. Mm. So I said, well, I can't go without my email for an entire day, so let me go get this app.
I have this app called Inbox. Isn't that Google's mail thing?
It's a different one, yeah.
Yeah.
But so I have several Gmail accounts, and one of them I use a Gmail app for just because I want to keep it separate from the other ones that I have in the mail app. And it is pretty bad, actually. It doesn't work half the time, and you can't download attachments.
Well,
it's a web view, what's that?
It's like a web view. It's like a web view app.
No, not the inside not of the a one native I'm talking wrapper. About. I don't think it's a web view. I think it's native.
Mm.
But I don't know.
I think it's one of those like native wrapper, you know, but you know, all web stuff inside of it.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't know how native-y it is. Doesn't feel native.
No, it doesn't feel native. That's right. For sure.
Don't like it. Don't trust it. Check it out. Look, you'll thank me later. But, you know, I was actually doing a double check today in thinking about this pick. And so I looked at the Mac version of Outlook again. Mm-hmm. I'm sad to report that that's pretty much the same old Outlook. It's got a nice new high contrast menu bar thing happening at the top of it. Mm-hmm. So it looks a little better. But you scratch the surface and it's just the same Outlook and Entourage, et cetera, that we've been seeing for
a decade. It's more designed plus. It's better if you're using Exchange. I have a few clients that are using Exchange servers, and that's what they recommend for the Mac client, right? So
of course, yeah. If you're using an Exchange server, it's really it's not the only way to go, but you know. Whereas the iOS version of Outlook is modern and clean and nice, the Mac version is as clunky as it's ever been.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hi, May, do you have a pick?
I do. And it is a blog post by Alex Cross, who is a developer over at support.com. Mm-hmm. So he's actually more of a web developer or full-stack engineer, as his fancy-pants folks like to say nowadays.
There you go, using that word again.
Fancy-pants or full-stack?
Engineer.
Engineer. Oh, yeah. Sorry, folks.
Does he build bridges or drive trains?
Yeah.
I'm just going to apologize now to all the Canadians listening and actual
both of them professional also license engineers at the same time.
Yeah. So full stack developers.
Now we're talking.
So a little different than iOS. But the thing I have here is a blog post about 19 tips for everyday Git use. So a lot of folks use Git, the version control system, probably with GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
But these are actually kind of nice. So if you've gone beyond the basics and you need to know a little bit more about, you know, what sort of powerful things that it has, or even more likely, what kind of dangerous things does it have?
Mm-hmm.
For example, rebasing.
Rebasing.
Yep. Rebasing is a very dangerous and arcane art, but super powerful when used appropriately. Mm-hmm. So he's got some tips here. I would highly recommend folks check this out, right? Like, it's 19 different tips, right? Like, how can you have better autocomplete? Right, so the Git that comes by default on the Mac does not give the autocomplete for, you know, whatever your Git, you know, options are, or your Git commands like clone and so forth.
Right.
Stashing files, right, where you can say, kind of don't want to make a branch for this, kind of don't want to apply it somewhere else, want to just, you know, not have to check an entire branch, I'm gonna stash my changes here, make some other change, and add these other things back in. Probably the one that's like saved my butt personally in a couple jobs ago is number 19, quickly find a commit that broke your feature. And that is Git bisect.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very awesome, powerful feature. Let me just describe, he describes it really well here as to how you would use it. But the basic idea is, imagine you have a code base where you have developers kind of just committing stuff in. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have really good or at all continuous integration going on, mm-hmm. You might be very, very many commits away from knowing which of these commits broke the build. You know, like, especially when you have, you know, rebasing and merging issues that, you know, conflicts and stuff that happen, that may not be obvious, right? Things may compile, but it's like, this is not functioning correctly at all. Get bisect is nice because you can find a known good commit and say, okay, look, obviously the, you know, the 2.x version was working correctly. Now the 2.1 version is not working. That's a known bad commit. And get bisect will cut the commit list in half and check out a branch directly in the middle. So if you have, you know, unit tests that you can write to test, you know, test out this feature, or if you just have to manually test these things, you say, oh, this one's still bad. Great. You run git bisect again with that known good commit and now the new known bad commit. So every time you're just cutting everything in half until you find the, aha, there you go. I found the commit that broke something by removing something from, you know, the Xcode project, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe like took your changes instead of their changes. Mm-hmm. Like it saves a ton of time, and it would have been damn near impossible. I swear it was like 100 commits between a known good commit and a, like the first bad commit that ended up happening or that got noticed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So crazy.
If you take nothing else from this blog post, I would say look at that one, because that's a real powerful one.
Yeah, but isn't the answer to merge your stuff into the main branch before going on vacation?
right before.
Yeah.
those grenade, the pull the pin and run commits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are wonderful.
Pull pin and run. It's funny because I often look for things like this. This is super helpful, I think. I know I have one branch where something went wrong a while ago, and I can't commit to it. So I've been committing to another branch for like months and months and months. And I often wonder, like, can I just not get rid of that one that doesn't work anymore and just make the one that's working the new master branch, you know, kind of thing? These are the kind of questions that I have for things like that.
Mm-hmm. Git is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, there's a way to force your changes into master and just make your current version the new master. But it's kind of dangerous. Be careful.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like I said, the one I'm using works, and I just continue working with that one. So,
yeah. When you try doing your commits, is it in Xcode or is it command line?
No, it's command line. Yeah.
Okay. All
right. Yeah. Well, yeah. What it is. Yeah, like the master branch is just pooched, and so I've been working on another named branch, and that I know that's the master branch to quote unquote use, right? So, mm-hmm. and to be honest with you, I only put stuff on Git as a sort of backup to my house burning down kind of thing, right? So, GitHub. For the most part, I'm pretty much the only developer that works on stuff these days. So, I'm only and I can't remember when. Again, I probably should run git bisect and figure out when things went wrong. Because, I mean, there's a conflict in the head somewhere, right? And it just can't commit to it or merge over to it. Hmm. Interesting. Mark, do you have anything to
I think offer? I already did mine. PayPal was kind of
your pick?
Pick and slash tip.
My pick is kind of a personal pick, and it's kind of, I think, you know, you've heard of these people before, but now I can officially tell you that I have been the developmental editor on a new Ray Winderlich book for the last, I don't know, 3-4 months. And it's called Swift Apprentice, and it came out today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's available.
Where's your link?
I don't have a link in here. I figured I'd freebase it or just run it, you know, run it off the cuff. But yeah, so.
Okay, anyway, you go. I'll find the link.
Yeah, I mean, Ray tweeted about it this morning.
Here it is.
And I, yeah.
First hit.
And so what it is we decided to, or the Ray Winderlich group decided to write a book that is meant for people who don't know how to do programming and want to learn programming, and the language that we chose to use is Swift. It's useful to people who want to get into Swift. It's useful for people who know nothing about programming but want to get into it, you know, get into a programming language. And since Swift is going to be, you know, sort of the language it looks like Apple's going to move forward with, clearly, that was what they chose to teach people how to program with. So if you're, you know,
beginner or intermediate developer, I think this is a good tool for you. I'm not sure if it's good for advanced people, but there are some really advanced concepts. I'm not sure if they all made it into the final edit. But I can tell you now that when I was teaching my course in September, I used this large portions of this book as the course material. And, you know, so my guinea pig students were learned how to program using this book. So anyway, it's out today in you can available for print, available as a PDF. I think it's part of the Swift Apprentice Bundle. There was a book by Matthias Holloman that he wrote. I don't know, he wrote, single-handedly wrote this four books that make up the iOS Apprentice series on raywenderlich.com. And so this is now bundled in with that, I believe. And many people who are developing today learned just about everything they started with was with the iOS Apprentice. So this is the Swift Apprentice book available on raywenderlich.com. And Aaron's put a link here and I'll put it in the show notes and people can check it out.
Congratulations, Tim. Great.
Yeah,
that link is to Ray Wenderlich's post about the book.
Right. Yep.
And so there's a link right in that article to take you to more info and to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and apparently, quite a few pre-sales already. So there's people getting it today, I guess, on their machines. Along with we wrote it all in Swift 2.1, so it's the latest. You know, it's written towards iOS 9 and. So on and so forth. So it's not like it's behind. It's right up to date, you know.
Cool. And actually, this post does a really good job of explaining questions I was just about to ask. But for those of you who are probably driving, so it's distinctly not an iOS programming book, which is the first question. So it's not learning how to program iOS with Swift. It's learning how to program using Swift as the learning language.
Right.
Right. Right. Okay. And then it looks like it probably is based on Playgrounds, I would guess, instead of running full-on apps, of course, is what we just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah, it's all Playgrounds. REPL.
Very cool, very cool.
It is cool. Tim, I don't see your name in any kind of credit here.
You
said you were a developmental editor, I get that.
There's two of us, myself and what's her name, hang on. Audrey Tam, she's a teacher in... Australia. We are the two. Mm-hmm. This is a new role that they just came up with a couple of months ago, and we're in there as developmental editors.
Shame on them for not putting your name in there.
Yeah, I think I
can. The book that I wrote back in 2010.
My name's in the book. It's maybe not on the cover.
Yeah, no, that's I guess, but they've got all this website page to work with. They're not crying out for space. It wouldn't kill them to say, written by Janie Clayton, Alexis Gallagher, Matt Galloway, Eli Ganim, Eric Kerber, and Ben Morrow. Developmental editors Tim Mitra and ..
Every time there's a few editors actually on the project as well.
No doubt. Yep. Like I said, when I wrote my book for Wiley, there were several editors all along the chain. Mm-hmm. And unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm in there.
I know you're in there, too.
And my picture,
and so do our listeners.
And the picture that I chose to be in there was taken by Fouad. So there you go. It all comes around.
It does. Sounds good.
When I even made the cut, I'm ahead of Greg Heo. Greg was the final pass editor on the book, so another connection to the More Just Code podcast.
Limitless connections.
And look at that; it actually says founder and host of the More Than Just Code podcast on app development and business right inside the book. So,
well,
I'm dragging you guys along with us,
riding those coattails mighty hard.
Yep.
We are so fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactamundo. Oh, somebody's got email. So I guess that's it for the week, and we'll wrap it up, and we'll say goodbye for another week. And so, Aaron, if people want to find you on the interwebs, where would they look?
They would shockingly go to twitter.com/AaronVeg, AaronVeg, or check out my application, Magpie, at Magpie Video on Twitter.
Cool. And Jaime, where people can find you?
Also on Twitter as @DeathOfTheHair.
And Mark, by email, how would they get a hold of you?
MarkR@smapsoft.com.
Cool. And once again, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, it-guy.com, and buy the book. So that's it for the week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There, you can find a summary and show notes for each episode. We list links to the items that we talk about on the show, as well as links to the apps on the App Store. If you like the podcast, please leave a comment on the website. And if you can, please write a review on iTunes. If you're listening on Overcast, go ahead and press the recommend button. It really helps others find out about the show. You can also follow us on Twitter. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at mtjc_podcast. If you'd like to support us, you can pledge any amount on patreon.com/mtjc. Thanks again for listening.
How about them Blue Jays?
How about them Blue Jays?
I didn't watch the game today because I was crushed by the defeat yesterday.
You had to watch. You cannot not watch. You can do whatever you like, your little heart desires.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a bandwagon fan or you could be an actual fan.
Oh, I actually went to a game the other day.
I know. How was that?
It was pretty cool. It was, you know, it's funny. I've been to one Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Ottawa Senators playoff game, like in one of the first rounds that they made it to.
You're talking about Sports Puck now.
Yeah, I'm talking Sports Puck, yeah. As a corollary, because that's the sports ball type thing that I'm most familiar with, right? And it was effing loud, right? And
yeah.
My stepson rented a hotel room at the Rogers Hotel, and it was effing loud too, so... Yeah, it's pretty cool.
The fans are really into it. Quite.
It was a good thing that they actually managed to, you know, to win the game too. Donaldson's home run, by the way, was like right towards our hotel room. I just looked at that ball and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Amazing.
It was really kind of cool.
Jaime Lopez Jr. in the house. Sorry, but I had to do like a musical intro for.
Don't get all karate on us, you know.
What up, Jaime?
Not much, just kind of kicking back here.
Good to be back. Good to be anywhere.
Good to be at all. And good to be taking note that this time I'm going to take extra special care about saving my recording this evening.
Oh, yeah, we're just talking about the snafu last week, so... Well, you know what? For me, my issue was I had just updated to El Capitan, and I didn't notice that it had reset my sound preferences to default. So when I very quickly just went in and opened up ScreenFlow, that's my backup recorder, and just hit record and didn't really look at the screen. And I didn't notice that the checkbox for record computer audio wasn't selected. So, and then when Aaron saved his file to his Dropbox, he got after he closed it out, it sort of said error saving or something like that, right?
Permissions error. It was very strange. Never seen that before.
Yeah, on a folder that you own, which is totally weird. Yeah.
Yeah,
and of course, and there's a container, like, because these apps are sandbox, there's a container folder where the app is supposed to write its temporary files, and normally QuickTime files get written there, and in this case, for some reason, that didn't work either for Aaron. So.
Well, as soon as you say don't save, like if you close the document that you're recording in QuickTime,
and it says
don't save, then it wipes away that thing from the sandbox.
Yeah,
and it doesn't trash it, doesn't put it in the trash, which would be a nice thing for it to do. It literally like rm-rf
F U R and yeah.
It just wiped on the drive immediately, and there was nothing I could do about it. I spent hours trying to dig through my drive, finding it possible locations for it.
Yeah,
that was a little bit of heartbreak a week ago this evening.
Yeah,
I just told my daughter about it actually, and she laughed her ass off.
Yes, revenge is a meal best served cold.
And it's very cold in space. I can't help but use that line.